It's been a joy to be here. You know, I enjoy this church so much because you act like you really enjoy being a Christian. And it's just so much fun to be here. And we want to thank you for the wonderful place that you've given us to stay. I told the pastor, I said, oh, that's such a wonderful hotel room. I said, when I get a hotel room like this, I know that next week it's going to be Joe's hideaway because the Lord has to keep us humble. But what a joy to be here. And of course, we enjoy seeing things wherever we go. You know, my husband's always looking for things of history. And so we enjoy seeing what's around. So I said to him this afternoon, now tomorrow, I want to go to the meal early because I want to see Crooked Creek. So I hope somebody can tell me where the Crooked Creek is, since it's Crooked Creek Baptist Church. But I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm originally from North Augusta, South Carolina. My husband's from Georgia. North Augusta's just across the river from Augusta, Georgia, and he said I was like the unbelieving Israelites. I got to the river and didn't cross over into the promised land. And you probably will all agree with that. When I was 17, my brother's friend had become a Christian. And when I was a child, I went to Sunday school. I came from a broken home. Our father basically deserted us when I was about 6 years old. And we only saw him once in a while. But I went to Sunday school when I was a child, and it was usually whatever church was close that I could walk to. And many times it would be a church that taught works for salvation. And when I became a teenager, I thought, well, I could never live that. So I just stopped when I was about 12 or 13 going to church at all. And when I was 17, my brother's friend had become a Christian, and he invited us to his church. And we went, our family went, and I received Christ after about 3 weeks of hearing the gospel. But I've often thought, what a wonderful thing that young man did. It was such a simple thing. He had just become a Christian. He didn't really know how to witness, but he gave a simple invitation. And, well, about 2 years ago now, we had our first great-grandson, and what a joy that was. But as we met with our granddaughter-in-law's parents and with our grandson and our daughter, and we prayed over little Gideon and prayed for his salvation the first day we brought him home from the hospital. And I thought about that young man, and I thought, he never knew that one simple invitation has now spanned four generations. And I thank the Lord for that young man. When I was 18, I dedicated my life to the Lord for full-time Christian service. I didn't know what the Lord wanted me to do, but a missionary came and spoke, and the Lord touched my heart, and I dedicated my life to the Lord for full-time Christian service. And from that moment on, I decided that I would not date a young man unless he had the same goals, unless he had the same thoughts about serving the Lord that I did, and how the Lord blessed that promise that I made to the Lord. Well, of course, I knew I should go away to school, but I knew that my mother couldn't afford to help in any way because she had worked for 20 years to raise all of us, and she always prayed that the Lord would let her live until we were all grown. And 7 days after my youngest sister turned 21, my mother went to be with the Lord. So I knew that she couldn't help, but the Lord provided a work scholarship at Tennessee Temple University, and that's how I got through college. I worked my way through. And of course, I say this to young people, when the Lord calls you, he will always make a way for you. And I thank the Lord that he made the way. And it was a wonderful thing to be able to be in college and to study, to be in the service for the Lord. But I remember going on the Greyhound bus, and it was like every turn of the wheel, Satan would say, what are you going to do when your clothes wear out? And I would just say Philippians 4:19, my God shall supply all your need. And the Satan would say, well, how are you going to buy your textbook? And I would say Philippians 4:19. And so I always say I went through college on Philippians 4:19. But thank the Lord for providing. Well, I met my husband in college, and I finished a semester before he did, and he said it's because I'm older, and I said it's because I'm smarter. But we started dating really just before I finished college, and then we became engaged, and we went to Olney, Illinois, and that was where he first pastored. He pastored a little church on the banks of the Tennessee River when he was in college, but his first full-time pastorate was in Olney, Illinois. Both our children were born there. So our children say, don't you dare say anything about Yankees, because that's what we are. So we always say we can't even have a decent Civil War at our house. But then the Lord, after being there 5 years, the Lord led us to Alabama. And, of course, we love the churches the Lord allowed us to serve in. And then in Alabama, the Lord called us into missions. And that was to the country of Australia. Well, we went to Australia, and it is such a interesting country. And, of course, this is many, many years ago that we first went, so things were a lot different then than they are now. But I went all over America telling people, oh, I don't have to learn a language in Australia because they speak English. Well, they do speak English, but would you know what I meant if I said he's a fad-thinking bloke and he lost a stone in a fortnight? Well, that's English in Australia. Fad dinkum means he's all right. A fad dinkum bloke means he's a guy or a fellow. And he lost a stone that's 14 pounds. They don't go by pounds, they go by stones. That lost a stone in a fortnight, that's 2 weeks. Well, that's English in Australia. And, of course, everything's different. They drive on the other side of the road in Australia. My husband said I already drove on that side, so I didn't really have a problem. I really didn't. And as he said the other night, if you want to get warm in Australia, you go north. If you want to get cold, you go south. And everything's different. The light switches, they're different. And people don't always believe me when I say this, but the water actually goes down the drain on the other side, in the opposite direction. And you say, who in the world stands and watches the water? But it's on the other side of the equator. So everything was different in Australia. And I said, I couldn't understand a word they spoke for about 3 or 4 weeks. Because everything, so many of the words are so different. And it's the same way in England. Because, of course, Australia was started by people who came from England. I'll just tell you some of the words that are different. The hood of your car in Australia and England, that's the bonnet. And the trunk of your car is the boot. And a truck is a lorry. And like suspenders that men wear, those are called braces. Maybe I shouldn't tell a mixed congregation, but suspenders in Australia would actually have been like a lady's undergarment. So I was always saying to my husband when he went in the men's store, man, make sure you say braces instead of suspenders. So you can see how this can really... you put what we call braces on your teeth. They call those bands on your teeth. And if you... what we call cookies, they call biscuits. And what we call biscuits, they call scones. A friend of mine from America told an Australian lady, she said, oh, I just love biscuits with gravy on it. And the lady said, oh, how dreadful, how dreadful. She was thinking of a cookie with gravy on it. Of course, a fortnight is 2 weeks. And a pram, that's a baby carriage. A torch is a flashlight. And often in Australia, they'll call a girl a Sheila. And they'll say, oh, look at the lovely Sheila. So if you didn't know what Sheila meant at the Outback, that's what it means. And in Australia, or in Scotland, they often call the women hen. And in some parts of England, they'll call the women ducks. So it's English, but it's a whole different English than Southern English. And in Australia, if you said you were under the weather, that meant you were drunk. And if you said you were perking, you know, like sometimes we say perking up, that means you were throwing up. So, and in Australia, a pacifier, like the babies have, that's called a dummy. So I've seen some children around with dummies in their mouth. When we came back on furlough, some friends of ours from Australia were home on furlough at the same time, and we went to Chicago and we visited them. And she and I took their baby to the doctor. And I was holding the baby, and the baby had the pacifier, or the dummy is the Australian. Well, she forgot we were in America, and she didn't want the baby to have the pacifier. So she called all the way across the doctor's office and said, "Give the dummy to me." Well, we got some really dirty looks, you know, on that. The worst thing is some of the words that we say in the South are really bad words in Australia. So you can get in trouble really quickly. You wouldn't say in the South, I don't know if you ever said this, but if you're not doing anything much, oh, I'm just piddling around. Well, that's a bad word in Australia. And the word, and sometimes I've heard people call their child, "Oh, you little booger." Well, that's really a bad word, you know. And the word bum, you don't say that word, it's a bad word. And of course, bloody is British profanity. It was really interesting watching our children when we came back to America, because the preachers were in the pulpit saying words that they got spankings for saying in Australia. So, but it's really interesting. Then, of course, the Lord led us to England, and England is a very fascinating country, and it was a blessing to be there. Of course, we started a church in Australia and started one in England, but people often ask me if I ever saw the Queen, and I'm always delighted to be able to say that we did. On one occasion, we took some friends to see the changing of the guards. And when we got there, the bobby, that's what they call the policeman, but the bobby said, "Oh, they're not having it today." And of course, we thought, oh, we're disappointed. But he said, "But if you stay around a while, you might get to see the Queen." So of course, we stayed around. And obviously, everybody else knew there would not be the changing of the guard that day, but because we were the only ones there. So we stood and waited, and in a little while, the Queen and all the royal family came, and they came in their open carriage as well. That was really exciting to us. And they went down to the river to see, they were going to pick up the Queen of the Netherlands. She was coming for a visit. So we stayed until they came back, and we got to see the Queen of the Netherlands. That was really exciting to us. And a lot of our British friends said, "How did you do that? We've lived here all of our lives and have never seen the Queen." On another occasion, when we lived in the city of Leicester, we were going downtown one day, and as we approached the city center, we saw the bobbies lined, and I said to my husband, "Oh, somebody important's coming." So I asked around, and somebody said, "Oh, Princess Diana's coming." So we had gone to go to the bank. I said to my husband, "You go to the bank. I'm staying right here." So I stood on the corner, and in a little while, Princess Diana came. And, of course, she was just as beautiful in person as her pictures. And the interesting thing, though, was that Charles was with her, but nobody had even mentioned him. He wasn't very important. On another occasion, after the death of Princess Diana, of course, we lived about 20 miles from where her home was out in the country, and we took some people to see her grave. And she's buried in what the British call the back garden. And so you go around her house, which is a large estate, and she's buried on a little island. There's a moat around it in the back garden, and there's a large picture of her, and people still bring flowers. But you know, as I stood there and looked across at her grave, I thought, really, her choices in life had brought her to this place. And I often tell young people, you might think it's a simple choice, but your choices in life bring you to the place where you are. So it's so important to make really good choices and ask the Lord to lead you every day in your choices. I know my time is about gone, but one of the greatest thrills of our ministry has been to be able to deliver Bibles to former communist countries, countries where they had never had a Bible. And what a great thrill. And with our teams through the years, we've given over 1 million Bibles. And to actually be mobbed for a copy of the Word of God, I cannot tell you the feeling. And of course, during the time, the early days when communism was just falling, and we actually had gone to, I think, to Budapest, Hungary, actually before the fall of communism. But to be able to give the Bible, give a copy of the Word of God to people who never had one. And I remember in Latvia seeing older women, and now they'd lived for 60 or 70 years under communism, and to see them weep because they had not seen a Bible in their language since they were little children, because, of course, when the Russians took over, everybody had to speak Russian. And that's just been the greatest joy of our lives. And to people would bring us gifts, and I know sometimes we'd get little bags with like little fish in it with our eyes looking up at you, and we were supposed to eat those. But I would just say thank you, and then wait till they left and then be really generous and give it to somebody else. But they were just so kind and wanted to give to us, and what a blessing that was. And I thank the Lord for all of His blessings, and the Lord has allowed us to go and to be in so many different places in our ministry, and what a joy that's been. You know, when I was a teenager, when people would talk about giving your life to the Lord, I thought, oh, that would be boring. But, of course, my life has been anything but boring. And I just promise you young people that if you dedicate your life, if the Lord calls you to be in His service, no matter where you serve, it'll be a great joy and a great blessing. I'll close with telling you about the Lord's protection. Of course, all of us know that day by day, the Lord has to protect all of us. But we've been in some really frightening places and frightening situations. And I'm just thankful for the Lord's protection. We were in Siberia delivering Bibles. We had a team with us, and in Krasnoyarsk. And we found a place on one of the streets where the dozens and dozens of buses would come. Most of the people had to use public transportation, and these old rickety buses would come and go. And we said, well, this would be a great place because there's so many people coming and going, getting on and off the buses. So we were there and delivering, just passing out Bibles by the hundreds as quickly as we could. When the buses would drive up, the people would reach through the windows to get them. And one bus drove up, and there was a lady reaching through the window, and she couldn't get the Bible. So the deep-thinking person that I am, I thought, well, I'll just get on the bus and give it to her. So I did. So I got on the bus, and I gave the woman the Bible. Of course, I had several Bibles that I gave to a number of people on the bus. And so I gave the Bibles out, and when I did, the bus started going. I mean, that's what buses do. I mean, they stop a while and then they go. But, well, I was still on the bus. And the bus, now I thought, of course, I'm beginning to be frantic. What am I going to do? Because the bus is picking up speed, and there's a door in the front, and there was one in the back. And, of course, the bus was so crowded, some people were standing up. And I remember being at the back door, and I looked down and I thought, I'm going to jump for it. I think I can make it. You know? Well, here I am. I'm in the city of several million people. I don't know any Russian, and I have no money whatsoever on me. And I'm on this bus. I have no earthly idea where this bus is going. So I thought, I'm going to jump for it. Well, just as I started to jump, the bus driver closed the door. Of course, he couldn't see me from the front. And the Russians, they don't worry about safety. You know, they think we've got millions of Russians, so it doesn't matter if you lose a few. So this bus door slammed on me. It caught my arm. And when it did, all the people started screaming. And one little lady fell down. I felt really badly about that. And somebody asked me once, what were they screaming? I said, how would I know? I can't understand Russian. They may have been saying, we got one, we got one. Well, when the people started screaming, of course, the bus driver stopped the bus, and I got off, but my arm was bruised. We had a nurse with us, and she checked me, and she said, I don't think anything's broken, but it was bruised from my shoulder all the way down to my fingertips. But, you know, when I thought about that night, I realized how the Lord had protected me, because I had on a long denim dress. Had it been one half second later, it would have caught my dress and I would have been under the bus. And so but so many instances like that, the Lord has protected us, and I thank Him for that. The only funny thing about that story is the team members said, Brother Ray was jumping over all the boxes screaming, they've got Mary, they've got Mary.